Is it a good idea for everyone to own a home?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Right now, we're going to ask today's big question, and it's about the sector of the economy that's at the foundation of the financial crisis, housing. The big question, can the housing market be fixed by changing who should own a home? The Obama administration, fresh from a financial reform victory, wants to move on to the problems of lower home prices and higher foreclosure numbers. Marketplace's John Dimsdale is with us live from our bureau in Washington. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Steve.
So what are the administration's plans to tackle housing?
Well, there does seem to be a changing philosophy that maybe home ownership isn't for everybody. In the past, the government encouraged as many people as possible to buy a house. There are government tax deductions and policies that keep mortgage interest rates low. But now housing officials say those incentives, maybe they got too many home buyers in over their heads. So the White House is looking to gradually unwind some of those government programs, including either eliminating or downsizing Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which were set up by the government to underwrite home loans.
And what would that mean for consumers, John?
Higher down payments on new properties, higher interest rates on mortgages, fewer tax deductions. It would mean more barriers to homeownership, especially for low-income people. They'll end up more likely to rent their house.
Yeah, and so if low-income people are hit, then what do advocates for the poor have to say about that?
Well, they're raising a lot of red flags that this puts homeownership further out of reach for the poor. They say, look, the financial crisis was caused by much more than bad loans to poor people, and they shouldn't have to pay such a price. And the folks in the Obama administration recognize how controversial this is, and they're saying that while the philosophy is changing, no decisions on how to implement any changes have been made.
All right. Marketplace's John Dimsdale reporting from Washington. John, thanks.
You're welcome.
By the way, word from the Labor Department just this hour says new jobless claims rose last week by the biggest number, 37,000, since February. The British oil giant BP continues to deal with the effects of the massive Gulf of Mexico oil disaster. Its rivals are learning valuable lessons as well. And given new parameters for operating offshore, four of the world's biggest oil companies say they want to spend $1 billion for a rapid response unit. The BBC's Rebecca Singer reports for Marketplace.
BP isn't the only one that would suffer as a result of stricter regulations on deepwater drilling. So ExxonMobil, Shell, Chevron and ConocoPhillips are committing $250 million each to a system that could be up and running within 18 months. The plan involves building a floating system that could be quickly deployed to a future deep-sea blowout. Victor Shum works for the energy consultants Pervin and Gertz. He says BP's experience has been a wake-up call.
All companies certainly have learned from it, and they indeed in this incident demonstrated that the industry was not prepared. Over the long haul, spending will be more than this $1 billion.
Deepwater drilling has been temporarily halted in the U.S. by the Obama administration, and critics say the only reason the companies are doing this is to restore public confidence in the oil industry. But BP isn't included in the plans. The chief executive of Exxon said this was because they didn't want to distract BP as it dealt with its current crisis. In London, I'm the BBC's Rebecca Singer for Marketplace.
European shares are pretty much higher right now. Markets on the continent are up about 1 to 2%. Asian shares closed mixed today. Wall Street yesterday, the Fed chairman Ben Bernanke said the economy is still struggling, and investors have been struggling with that. The NASDAQ lost more than 1.5%. Same pretty much for the S&P. The Dow shed 1%, 109 points, to close at 10,120. By the way, we got word today from UPS, the shipping giant, that revenues there were up 13% for the latest quarter.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by LendingTree, offering the ability to manage money, credit, and loans all in one place. LendingTree.com.
Betting is big in the sports world. Those who put money on, say, a golf tournament or a baseball game are playing into Tony Woodham's game, a sports betting hedge fund. Woodham's Centaur Group started the Galileo Sports Fund just a few months ago. Tony, welcome to the program.
It's good to be with you, Steve.
How does this work?
This works in a very similar way to lots of different funds that you might find in the financial markets. We just analyze sports probability and statistics. And what we're looking for is patterns in numbers that give us an indication of what's going to happen in the future in terms of one team playing another or one person playing another if it's, for example, a tennis match.
So if you were putting money on a baseball game, you would look at a player's stats such as the ERA for a pitcher or maybe a batting average, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know a great deal about baseball, so I don't want to sound as I do. But if you're in a bar and you're watching a sport and you're watching your particular team and they go a few points up in a match, quite often if they're playing a certain team in a certain area, you know they're going to concede their lead because it's what they do historically. And we just apply science to that process.
What separates this? I mean, why wouldn't we just call this gambling, sports betting?
Well, do you know what, Steve? I've had this conversation a lot. You can call it gambling if you like. I mean, as long as you apply the word gambling to the process that Goldman Sachs apply when they're trading currencies, then it's the same process. So you can call it gambling, you can call it betting, you can call it trading. It's whatever word you choose to apply. The one thing I would stress about that is that gambling is not a word that should apply to one industry, i.e. sports betting. You know, gambling exists in the financial markets, as we've discovered. My background is derivatives. I traded futures in the City of London and in the US and over in Europe for 20 years. I've worked with hundreds of different traders in the financial markets. Some were brilliant, some were risk averse, and some were just shooting from the hip and taking big risks and were effectively week in, week out gambling. So we don't gamble. I mean, we apply an intelligent process and we look for solid risk-reward opportunities.
Tony Woodhams at the sports betting hedge fund Centaur, the CEO over there. Tony, thank you so much.
Thanks for your time.
And finally, an Air France flight attendant's been arrested and charged with stealing from passengers who fell asleep during long flights. Police became suspicious about the woman because her income as a flight attendant didn't quite match her lavish lifestyle. She's accused of taking cash, credit cards, even checks. I wonder if the passengers even notice, given all the money they fork over on board anyway. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. Check us out online, marketplace.org in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiotakis.
American Public Media.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.